Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
What is the average of two Fridays at 9 a.m. Pacific?
Is it a Tuesday
at noon Eastern? It is, Dan. It is.
It was my understanding that there would be no math. How does calendar demand math?
Calendar demands calendar math, which is calendrical. You are creating space-time. Sorry, I was going to go on a whole Yoon-Ha Lee trilogy thing there, but most people have not read those books anyway,
including me.
I have read them. Calendrical calculations, and there's a lot of math in those books, actually. So I was in Arizona on Friday on family business, and I'm going to be in Ohio on next Friday. Or I'm probably,
you don't sound very sure of yourself.
I think I'll be in transit at our usual time this Friday. I think I'll be on a plane hovering somewhere over the United States. So on my way to Ohio via Illinois, I guess. So, So instead, it's Tuesday.
Hey, it's Tuesday. It's very strange.
I just uploaded Total Party Kill because that's part of the Tuesday thing, and I didn't have the episode until last night, so I just uploaded it. I'm still actually uploading the video version of that in the background, so that's fun. And I hope people really appreciate that.
Took my break from editing The Rebound, which is my usual Tuesday morning activity, and here we are.
That's because we're slaves to the calendar. In fact, I had a crazy thing happen to me, which is I've talked a lot on podcasts about, you know, being a person who is making their own schedule and working at home and all of that. Well, you've been working at home a lot longer than I have, but you are, you know, more independent than you once were, I suppose.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah.
I often will mark my days by, you know, Calendar, our leader, right? Like Monday morning, it's
all
upgrade.
Hell,
and I talk to Mike, and that's like I kick off my week talking to Mike Hurley. And for those who listen to this podcast, in addition to the Friday morning Six Color Secret podcast, on Friday afternoon I usually talk to Tim Goodman on the TV Talk Machine podcast. And last week or 2 weeks ago, I guess, we decided to move it to Thursday. And it was one of those things of like, well, that's different. Like, how will I know that it's Friday now? Maybe by talking to you. Maybe you are now my signifier for Friday.
Oh, that's right. Well, I mean, it was weird because last Friday, the Six Colors podcast is sort of like the last scheduled event for me usually in a week. And so last week I was like, oh, my Friday is totally open. What should I do? So I went to lunch with Tony Sindelar. That was what I did. Instead of doing a podcast at noon, I went to lunch.
That's great.
Yeah, that was nice. That was a nice change of pace. Now we're doing this on Tuesday. My podcasts have gotten weird because I used to record a lot of podcasts during the week. And because now the people whose schedules I'm beholden to, that is harder for them. I now record a lot of my podcasts at night, which is very strange because it means that Monday and Tuesday, I rarely have anything scheduled on my calendar. So my entire day, I used to like, because I would have my morning, I would go and write. Then like midday, I would have my podcast. I have lunch. And then in the afternoon, I would do my nonfiction writing work. Mm-hmm. And it was a really nice way to structure the day. And now it's like, well, my podcasts are like 10 p.m. Eastern on Monday and Tuesday. And that's like a totally different. And then I'm like wiped because it's late and I don't get to bed on. Yeah. Anyways. So my only thing like scheduled during the week is like the Six Colors podcast and Clockwise on Wednesday, which is like Clockwise is my midpoint. It's noon on Wednesdays. That's like, it's like the hump day thing, right? It's like once I'm done with Clockwise for the week, my week's on the slope downwards to being almost finished.
That's how I felt about, the Thursday positioning of Download is like that, where like when that episode's over, because that's also a lot of work. That podcast is a lot of work to schedule guests every week and to do all the topics and all that. We don't have the guests. It's more working Clockwise because not only is it longer, but we have to do all the topic work. Like the Clockwise is brilliant because you give your guests their own assignments. It's great.
So
anyway, Download is a lot of work to prep. It's intense to host it, and then I have to edit it afterward. When that's all done, I feel like I am just coasting through the rest of the week at that point. Like, that's the big, the last, like, big thing I have to do. And then I can kind of slide down from there, which doesn't mean that I don't do any work after noon on a Thursday, but it does mean that I don't know, a burden is lifted. I feel like there's not a lot left in my mandatory inbox, which is kind of nice.
So Thursday afternoons is my Macworld column writing time. So it's after that. Then it's just like, oh, then I just get a nice little leisurely slope through the Six Colors podcast on Friday.
Uh-huh.
Because it's very, the Six Colors podcast is, it's light.
It's nice. Yes. It's nice.
Informal.
I agree. So what it's doing here on Tuesday, I don't know.
Screwing with us. It's totally screwing with our schedules.
Yeah, but it's okay. Well, I'm sure we'll return to the warm embrace of Calendar on Fridays, but I hope that this sacrifice will make him not angry.
Appease him. Lay it at the altar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. But I was also struggling with, speaking of calendars, I had a podcast yesterday with an Australian, and that was hilarious this happens sometimes when I'm scheduling with people on the East Coast, including this very episode, where the fear is that everybody's trying to help everybody else by translating into their time zone, and so nobody's actually agreed on a time zone. Like, when you said you were free at noon, I said something like, I will see you tomorrow at noon ET, right? Like, it's like, just let's be clear, you mean your noon.
Oh, yeah.
My noon. But I've also had it where people have said noon, knowing that I'm on the West Coast, and been like, oh, sure, noon is fine. And I'm like, all right, you're in New York, so I'll be there at 9 a.m. And they're like, no, I meant noon Pacific, but they didn't say Pacific. So anyway, with Australia, it's even more complex, because it was, to you Monday afternoon. And I think to myself, but that's Tuesday morning for you. Are you sure? We're talking on Monday. Because if you think it's Monday, that means it's Sunday. And it was fine, but it was, this is why.
I ran into something similar scheduling last week on Clockwise. We had Shahid Kamal Ahmad, who's in London.
Yes.
And I tried to be helpful and gave a GMT time, and he pointed out that they're on BST, right now.
Yeah.
And it's like, I had the right time, though. Like, I gave him the correct hour, just the wrong time zone designator.
Yeah, yeah.
He set me straight, but like, that's weird too.
This time of year, when I'm sending a note to like Mike Hurley, I did that yesterday, actually. I say London time for him.
Yeah,
because
that makes more sense.
I could put BST. I know it's British summertime, but it's not GMT though, so I can't use that. Yeah, it's what I'm saying.
The important thing is it's this hour where you are located.
Calzones is an app by David Smith in the App Store that's all about scheduling with time zones, and there are some of us who use that app and need that app, because it can be confusing.
It's one of the things I like about I use an app on the Mac, which I've written before in C's Colors, called The Clock, which has like a little calendar menu bar clock, but it lets you add multiple like time zone clocks too. So that I always find helpful. I have a UK one and a West Coast one set up. So
I was scheduling yesterday a podcast with East Coast Texas and London, and it was one of those things where I kept having to say, can we do this at 9/11/noon/5 p.m. or does it need to be? And then, and I think Mike Hurley came back and said, because he's the London one, he said, I'd rather do it at 9 p.m. So then I restated that to the group, and I said, okay, so how about 1 Pacific, 3 Texas, 4 Eastern, 9 London? And everybody went, great. But I was like, I'm going to do the math for you all, because we need to get this right. So yeah, I don't know. It's time zones. How do they work? I guess what I'm saying is, all hail Calendar. And, you wrote a Macworld piece last week about Apple borrowing from Google, which is funny because John Gruber posted that thing where he's like, you know, more like Android ripoff, am I right? About the, which, I mean, fair point, the multitasking. Basically,
sure. Yeah.
This happens in both ways, which I think is dumb. And I think this leads into you saying, you know, yeah, well, you know, this works both ways. Apple should take some stuff from what Google is doing and lift it, because it does go both ways. It is very clear, by the way, that Google I/O that Google was basically like, yeah, Apple got this interaction right, and we didn't. We're just going to use that. Well, that makes the most sense. And in fact, I wonder, because I was thinking this last year at Google I.O. I wonder if Google actually implemented a second-rate interaction system because they didn't want to do exactly what Apple did. And then after a year, they're like, no, we should just do what Apple did.
Well, and there's always the question of what becomes convention and widely accepted, right? Like Windows, you know, there was the whole Windows versus Mac. There was a suit about that, the look and feel suit.
Sure.
And, you know, but at a certain point, everybody had drop-down menus, right? Like,
yeah.
'Cause that was how computers worked. So some of these things become a convention because they're just the way that we get used to using things. And I think that's not bad because, among other things, it's good for consumers because it also means that moving back and forth between platforms becomes less onerous. If you have to relearn all of your interactions, then you are essentially locked in to your platform. And that's not to say that doesn't still happen to degrees, but you know, if you went from Android to iOS and it was like 180 degrees different, you know, you would be very annoyed and frustrated and probably give it up and go back to the Mac. But the fact that they share a lot of things in common and you can sort of get through and relearn without it being a huge obstacle in your way of adapting a new platform is good for you because it means you have portability. They obviously lock-in still happens in other ways, but I think that's a plus. And I think, you know, there shouldn't be any stigma attached to, well, this is better, let's do this. And so the same, there have been rumors, for example, and there have been rumors about this for years, but there have been rumors that, you know, Apple might add like a swipe typing keyboard in iOS 13. Saw that floating around at some point. And, you know, personally, I'm like, I have no problem with
why
that.
Not?
Like, that interaction is good, and I think it works well in the places it's done it. And the fact that you wouldn't, there's the, not doing it because somebody else is doing it, and you feel like you look like you're just copying it, feels like, you know, cutting off your nose to bite your face, etc. So I'm all in favor of that kind of stuff. And like I said in the piece, competition makes all of these products better. And you should not be, you know, I'm not saying rip everything off, but there are cases where I think things become sort of the vernacular for how we interact with technology.
And again, should Google make multitasking on Android worse just so that they aren't doing what Apple is doing? Like, I this may not be true, but I do kind of feel like that's what they did last year. And so like, nah, we got our own take on it. When in their heart of hearts, they knew that it was like that. No, Apple's basically on the right track here. And this time they're like, no, we're just going
to
do.
Yeah, I don't know where
fine.
It becomes.
It's fine.
Absolutely. I guess your only concern is if it becomes like actionable like legally. And I don't know where that line is.
My problem is that every time this happens, the infringing side is insulted by the other side's fans, right? Like
sure.
what Gruber did. And, you know, this goes back and forth. I mean, we can all say, first off, Android fundamentally was a copy of iOS. That's how it started. And then they reached a point where Google started doing some innovations and Apple ended up picking them up. And a lot of stuff that we have in iOS now is basically Apple's take on a Google feature, or at least a feature Google did first. The other thing is, of course, the narrative versus reality, which is everybody loves the narrative of Google announces something in I/O in May and then Apple announces something in I/O or at WWDC in June. And it's a response to Google.
Sure.
Where, of course, all those decisions were made a year ago, basically.
Yeah, we did that in like a month. Sure. Yeah, we just whipped that up.
Yeah, we whipped that feature up because we liked it so much. So like, if Google dropped like some completely amazing feature this year, Apple's not going to respond with it this year. However, I do think something like Night Sight, which Google dropped last year, Apple's gotta be responding to that, right? Because that's an example of a feature, and they stuck Apple with it again this year, where they showed two pictures, and on one level it's kind of not fair because one of them is a night shot and one of them is a processed long exposure machine learning whatever. But in the end, it's like we took two pictures in the dark, and one of them you can see stuff, and that's ours.
Right.
That's the kind of thing where. The moment I saw it, I said, you know, Apple has to respond to this. Apple can't just say, we're not going
right.
to, but they weren't going to be able to do it in a month. They got it takes a cycle. So now we're at the end of that cycle, and I will be disappointed if Apple doesn't have some sort of a response to Nightsight.
And it's not like something that it doesn't want to do anyway, right? Obviously, Apple would love to have its camera taking great pictures in the dark. And it's definitely talked about that before in terms of, improving low light performance. Google just sort of took that a step further and decided to throw all its computing power at it. And there's no reason Apple couldn't have done it before, whether it just didn't think of it or didn't prioritize it or whatever. Or maybe they just it didn't click until sort of Google started doing it. But yeah, there's no reason they couldn't and shouldn't do that. And I think you're totally right. And I think, likewise for Google, there is stuff that Apple has done that Google feels the need to respond to because they can't afford to have that big a differentiator between their platforms, right? And again, it's a lot of stuff where there are smart people at both companies. They can totally come up with these things independently, but sometimes they don't.
Yeah, it's true. I wrote a couple of things last week of note. I wrote a thing about iPad Pro keyboards that Mike and I talked about for half an hour on Upgrade this week. So I don't know if we need to really rehash that, other than I do have a Bridge Pro keyboard now, and that makes me happy. But I still keep thinking about the rumor that they're going to allow cursors, on external pointing devices in iOS 13, at which point I'm just going to want one of these with a trackpad in it. But leaving that aside, the other piece I wrote is my cockeyed optimism about Apple and the future of Mac OS. And I wrote that for Macworld. And that basically is me saying, I feel like Apple is not going to close all the doors in Mac OS, even though everybody's sort of has been saying for years now, Apple's going to close all the doors in Mac OS. They're going to make everything App Store only, and they're going to lock everything down. It's going to be just like iOS. And I wanted to lay out my case for why I don't think that's the case. I think that Apple is, I look at something like developer mode in Chrome OS, and I think, what Apple is doing is adding a whole bunch of default lockdown features that you can turn off. And my gut feeling is that that's where this is going, is that Apple's going to keep on adding security measures for Mac OS. But what they're going to let you do is opt out. They're going to let you set a lower security level because they know most people will stay with the defaults, and most people are going to have the training wheels, the safety rails. They're going to use that. And if you're somebody who wants to, for whatever reason, as a power user, turn those things off, then they'll let you either in one go or by switching a bunch of different switches in various places. And my iMac Pro has Secure Boot, where it's basically got to verify the OS cryptographically before it even launches. And there are two modes of that. There's the one where it has to check on the internet now and make sure it's still valid. And then there's the one where it's if it checked at some point and it was valid, it's fine. And then there's another setting, which is no, just don't. And system integrity protection is like that, where it's basically saying, do not stick things in the system folder, basically. Do not edit things in that folder. If you do, it changes the characteristics of the system folder, and we're going to say you've lost integrity and this isn't safe. And you can turn that off if you want.
It's very judgmental in my loss.
Yeah, I know. You
integrity.
Have no integrity anymore, Mac OS, because somebody put a kernel extension in you, whatever it is. And they're adding all of those things notarizing and stapling and things like that. That the whole idea is to they're building new techniques that involve software that's not in the Mac App Store. This all leads me to believe that that's the direction they're going, which is not to shut the door on all this stuff, but just to make the defaults locked down. And for me, the only open question is, would they ever do some of that on iOS, where they would actually let people open things up a little bit more than what they've done now, which is sort of certificate based, right? Which is that through various developer programs and things, you can get things on the side, but they're intended for, they're especially esoteric. I wonder if they would open it up even more on that side. But on the Mac, I just can't see it, because why even have the Mac then?
Yeah, no, I think we talked about this a little bit a couple weeks ago, and I agree with you. I think the Mac you know, they've made their commitment to the Mac pretty clear. It's going to change, which is totally true, but I don't think, you know, I certainly don't believe the fear-mongering that it's going to be totally iOS-ified. I think that just makes sense. They are maintaining those as different product lines for a reason. And there may be some evolution of both of those product lines as we get further down the path, but I think they know what makes the Mac successful for its user base, and they're not gonna screw with that too badly. Right.
And I don't have a problem. I know some people do, but I don't have a problem with the idea of Apple locking down the defaults and even kind of scaring people and saying, well, you should really use system integrity protection. You know, you really should use the safe boot. You really should use these features. You don't really want software that's not coming through a verified process. And, you know, most people are going to get scared off by that. I think that the downside of that, and this actually dovetails with this, the antitrust App Store thing that came down from the Supreme Court, where they're going to allow that case to proceed. It's a similar thing, which is sort of like the downside of it is you end up in a situation where Apple goes from saying we're locked down to saying we're locked down unless you unlock it. And while I actually like that from the perspective of I bought the phone, it's my phone. If I want to do something to it, you should let me. And that's how I feel about my Mac, for sure. The ramifications of doing something like that on the Mac or on iOS are still a little disturbing, because what it means is that you will get people who will say, because like if we just use the Mac as an example, okay, here's a new thing that requires you to turn system integrity protection off, but it's a great feature. It's like, okay, well, now you have to convince people of that, which makes it harder if you're a third party, if this is your bread and butter and it's an important product, and now you have to tell people to turn off security in order to get it to work. It's going to make it a harder sell for you. It makes it a harder, harder business for you. But the other side of it is unscrupulous people will now be like, aha, I can talk people into turning this off for various reasons, and then I can fully exploit their computer. Or on iOS, the example I would give is if Apple ends up having, for various reasons, to allow sideloading of apps with security turned off, you know, that is going to lead to a whole market of, you know, probably piracy and certainly of malware, where stuff is going to be sideloaded, that people are going to get talked into sideloading things that are bad. And right now you can't talk people into it, because it has to go through the App Store. Right, and that's not great. Even if Apple says, no, or even if Apple says, those all have to be signed, and if it's malware or scamware, we're going to just turn off the signature and you're gone. They could do that, but still, it's not the same, and it's bad for the platform's image, right?
Right. Well, and I mean, at the same time, you already have challenges that they're working on fighting, right? There was this thing this week, the WhatsApp vulnerability that was making the news. And it's like, if you're already putting out fires of things that are like legitimately trying to find ways to bypass all the protections you've already put in place, it does seem like giving the opportunity to lower all of those protections is very risky.
This is the balance, right? Which is, as a platform owner, which would I prefer, to keep everything locked down or to have everything locked down by default, have a switch that makes it not locked down, and when somebody uses that switch to do something terrible, you just shrug and are like, look, we told you not to flip the switch. Like, that's much more complicated, because the fact is, it's like those stories. You remember those stories that were like, oh, there's iOS malware going around, and it turned out it was all jailbroken stuff.
It's always jailbreaks, yeah.
And the fact is, doesn't change the story, doesn't change the perception out there that there's malware on iOS,
but it changes the reality of, you know, people are not, the perception is not great, but at least the perception is worse than the reality of not that many people are getting affected by this. And it's much worse if it's the alternative, where the story is also really large, but it's also a real security threat. Well,
imagine,
right? Like, that's
imagine
way worse.
A scenario where somebody builds, like there's a game, let's say like Fortnite comes out, something like Fortnite, and they did an Android, they don't want to be in the iOS App Store. because they don't want to give away 30%. So they set up their own sideload store on iOS, and iOS now allows sideloading because of a court ruling or a negotiation or politics or whatever. Let's say in that scenario, it's allowed. Now you have a case where you've got a vendor of a product that people want who's telling them to turn off all the security on their phone to install this thing. And like, that is where this stuff can lead, is perfectly legitimate vendor, but using a path that basically takes the security off the device.
Yeah.
And that is not good, right? That's not good.
It makes me think of another kind of a problem that's kind of like that does exist right now. My friend and co-host John Moltz brought this up. There are currently, iOS does not provide restrictions, i.e. parental restrictions, from installing profiles. There is right. No way to disallow somebody on a managed phone from installing profiles. And you can do some kind of nasty stuff with profiles in terms of, like, basically routing traffic, for example, to specific places, like using a VPN, for example. And so he noted that his son had wanted to add these, I think it was some sort of game mod or something like that on iOS, and it was basically prompting the install of a profile. Now, it requires you enter your code, like your PIN, but if you're a kid and you're like, oh, I just want this thing, like, and you don't really understand the implications of installing that, then you might go ahead and improve it. And it's doing all sorts of nasty stuff. And that seems like a fixable problem, but...
So I migrated Julian to a new laptop, to a MacBook Air, from his old, very, very, very old hand-me-down MacBook Air. And he's got, like, Mac Keeper on there. Oh, and I'm like, what are you doing? And the answer is, he was somewhere installing something for a game he wanted to play. Nothing particularly weird. And he either clicked on something by accident, or it was writing with something else. Yep, but whatever happened, he got garbage software installed on that computer. And I said to him, do not install weird software. Just don't do it. But he did it. And it's just, you know, it is so easy to go down that path once people, and like I said, when a legitimate vendor opens the door and then leaves it open, that's even worse, because now all of those things are vulnerable. So when I my point is that, like, I want to be clear that I understand why Apple doesn't want to have a switch in a lot of cases, because people will flip it and it will reflect badly on Apple's platform. But, you know, also you need to have a switch for experts, which is why, and this is my source of optimism, that's why the stuff like notarization makes me optimistic, is because notarization is Apple building a whole system that allows it to approve and identify pieces of software that are outside of its distribution mechanism,
right?
Which in turn allows it to shut them off if they're bad actors at the software level, not even at the developer level, which they already could do. And, you know, that's one way to do sideloading on iOS, as well as increase the security on macOS, is basically gatekeeper and everything's signed. And, you know, okay, we're going to let you sideload in certain circumstances, but everything's still got to be signed. And if you're some sort of, like, fly-by-night criminal operation, you're going to have to ask Apple, you know, you're going to have to sign up for an Apple developer certificate, and you're going to have to sign it. And if anybody does anything untoward, it's just going to die. Like, they will send out the kill switch and it dies. So, you know, Apple's put development resources into finding ways to do control of its platform without locking everything down 100%, because on the Mac they have to. On iOS, I don't know. I mean, what if they have to? I guess that's the question, is like, what if they have to?
Yeah. I think it'll be an interesting development.
That'd be very different.
Hope it doesn't come to that, because I do think it will be far... I think the downsides will far outweigh the upsides.
I think you're right.
And that's risky. And I think that's also, you know, we've talked about this in the past, but fundamentally, a tricky thing when the institutions of government responsible for regulating these things don't have a good understanding of the technological implications.
Right.
Some of them do better than others, but it's tough because, you know, the business side of it, I think, does make, there are questions there that get raised where it's like, yeah, okay, that may be something that has to be changed, but how do you do that without influencing the technology, like having all these unforeseen, or at least unforeseen for those people making the decisions, technological ramifications, like, you know, stuff we always talk about with encryption. You know, people want a safe way to bypass encryption, and they think it's really easy, but that's because they don't understand the technology behind it and the challenges inherent in only providing safe access to people who should have that access. That is a challenge. So, yeah.
Anything else going on we should talk about?
I this is just sort of an aside. I, on a whim, I bought a Google Home Hub. I guess it's now a Nest Home Nest.
I guess
Hub?
So.
Nest. I don't know. It was on sale, and I thought, oh, that seems interesting. And I was writing something about various voice assistants at the time, so I picked one up, and I am surprised how much I like it. Because I had an Echo Show, which was the Echo with a screen.
Yes, I have one of those.
It annoyed me. And I feel like the Google version of that is just a much better implementation, in terms of not only is it a much more attractive device, but I feel like it does the things I want to have on a screen better.
It couldn't be much worse than
the Amazon. Yeah, I think that's kind of what it comes down to.
Having had the Amazon Echo Show for whatever, a year and a half or however long it's been, 2 years, we've kept it because it does like show you like the status of all your timers and stuff like that, which is better than there not being a screen there. But in terms of the functionality of that screen, it's useless. Like Amazon, it feels like Amazon has made no effort to make that screen useful in almost any way.
And they put out a second version of it too, which I haven't tried, but I had no reason to after the first one was so atrocious. But yeah, I think Google's is nice. Oh, my favorite thing about Google's, it doesn't have a camera, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
It actually just makes a very attractive... I've never really been into the idea of like the digital photo frame, but it actually makes a very attractive digital photo frame. That's what I have it doing most of the time, is just sort of rotating through pictures through Google Photos. And it's a nice looking screen. Like it certainly is, you know, you won't think that it's just a photograph, but I find it much less distracting than a lot of the digital photo frames that I have seen before. And it actually seems like a fairly solid device otherwise, in terms of all the other things I've asked to do it. The sound is better, I think, than the Echo Show. I've been really impressed with it in the week or so that I've been using it. I don't know. We'll have to see if it ends up being something that I keep around. It's also much smaller than the Echo Show, which is nice because the footprint on that thing was enormous. I'm like looking at it because I can see where I threw it after I unplugged the Echo Show. And I'm like, yeah, it's like, it's a fraction of the size. It's far less obtrusive.
Yeah, it's the Amazon has really, I don't know. Amazon's hardware stuff is fascinating to me because I don't know what it is. Like they threw that thing against the wall and then they did a second one, but as somebody who uses it, it just, I don't know. I think Google's able to leverage the, you know, Android and Android Auto and all sorts of other sort of like interfaces that have already been built, whereas Amazon seems to need to build everything themselves. But they've just done a really bad job. I don't know. I should be able to have much more customization of what that screen does sort of when it's idle and it just doesn't want me to do it. Reminds me actually of the Kindle, where every other ebook reader that's ever been made will put the book, like the cover of the book that you're reading when you turn it off. And it just is like, nope, we have a screensaver of like 8 random things that we picked and those are what we show and you have no control over it. And like,
that's if you even pay for the privilege.
Yeah. Otherwise you get
not
ads.
Having ads.
Otherwise you get ads. Yeah. And the Echo Show is like that, where it's like, okay, Amazon, the idea of a voice assistant that also has a screen is a great thought, but you have to do something with it. And it was half baked when it came out and it has never baked, right? It is never really baked. It's still
they didn't do anything.
Not good. And it's very frustrating. And part of the idea, I think they are YouTube, that, you know, they made a YouTube deal to get YouTube back, which was part of the original idea, was you could ask for a YouTube video and it would play it. But of course, then Amazon and Google got into a dispute and it was removed. And I don't know what's going on there. It's too bad. I feel like there could be a very nice interface to show ambient information on it, like, you know, current temperature and your calendar. But like, even the calendar stuff on Amazon, I've shut so much of that off because it's terrible. Like the calendar stuff, it, like, your control over what calendars it shows is limited, and then all it does is show an event at a time and scroll and like fade through them, which is useless. It's useless. So I don't know. It's bad, and I would get rid of it if not for the fact that it still actually does serve that purpose of letting us do
it's
multiple
the bare
timers.
Minimum. That's the thing. Like, and it's such a I toyed with the idea. Amazon put out that clock, the wall clock that would show you your timers, but apparently it was terrible. And so it was just like a smart wall clock that connected with Bluetooth to your Echo and would then like light up like where the timers were. And I was like, that's a very clever idea. But the problem with it apparently was that it was not terribly reliable. My problem with it is that the Echo in the kitchen is actually a Sonos One, which doesn't have Bluetooth. So it wouldn't work with that anyways. And it's like, I don't understand. Like, you almost had a good idea. You just executed it really badly.
And people have this complaint about Apple a lot. And I think it happens with a lot of tech companies that have some vision and then they don't have follow through or they are not entirely committed to the product. And Apple's apps have that happen to them a lot. But with Amazon, it's like, okay, you had a vision. There's something here. And rather than kind of press your advantage and continue to iterate and figure out what this product should be, it's like they just gave up and they're like, whatever.
Yeah.
And yet they put out a second generation model. That's the one I don't get.
Makes very little sense.
All right. Well, we have fulfilled the demands of Calendar for now.
Excellent.
But we will return, but not Friday, because again, I will be in a plane somewhere, flying somewhere. I don't know where. Over, let's say, Colorado, maybe by then.
Sure. Let's say Colorado.
Why not? What's the worst that could happen? All right. Thank you for being subscribers. Thank you for listening to this nonsense. And we will see you probably a week from Friday, assuming the calendar is not angered by our averaging of 2 weeks into a Tuesday. But until then, goodbye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.